Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have an exciting guest on. I'm actually very excited to have him on because I have a lot of questions for him that I'm sure a lot of you listeners are going to enjoy. So, Marshall, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nancy. I'm glad to be here.
You're great. Or, wherever we are, right?
We're just connected. Are, right.
Even if we think we're someplace, we're probably not there.
Okay.
Now, Marshall, could you tell my listeners a little bit about who you are and why you wrote the book, Adam, the Missing Link? And then I have some questions to ask you.
Okay. I graduated from the California Institute of Technology back in 1951, Nancy. And those were the days when things were a lot simpler than they are today. But during my education, I had read a lot about the stories in the Bibles, and I was trying to reconcile the information that the Bible gave us and the information that I was receiving on the scientific end from my professors at Caltech. And those curiosities had carried through all of my life. For instance, where did we come from? How was our species being categorized by the anthropologists? And where did the information that was in the Bible come from? There was a lot of scientific things, we can get into that later, that I saw in the Bible that I couldn't figure out that a 5,000-year-old document would have such advanced information. And as I went through my career in industry, I spent 30 years working for a Berkeley company called Upright Inc., and then retired and couldn't stand not working, so I went back to work and had a 22-year career in real estate in San Francisco, and completed my book, which I'd been thinking about all these years. In other words, it's a subject that was so compelling to me that I had to get the answers to these questions. And I finally found an author named Zachariah Sitchin, who in 1975 published his first book and has published 12 to 13, 14 books since then. And he uncovered for me the information I was looking for. So I decided to put it in a book form that would be easy for people to understand. It's not easy to read Zachariah Sitchin's books. They're quite complex and scientific. So I took the information plus things that I had researched, and I published Adam, the Missing Link, which is the new history of mankind's creation. And this is the subject that I think we can talk about.
I think it's going to be a great subject. I do have some questions for you, Marshall,
Sure. Because
as a child, I had a very hard time believing the words that came out of the Bible. Not because I knew it all, because I was only 6 years old at the time, but I had a really freak accident, and I landed with my head and neck under my back. And after that, it was kind of like I got shown images and had angels talking to me and all kinds of stuff coming in. And it didn't make a lot of sense to me going to church on Sunday, listening to what was being said, which didn't really correlate with what I was being told inside.
Uh-huh.
So at the young, tender age of 6 years old, I said to my mom, I am not going to church again.
Wow, I bet you didn't like that.
No, my mom said, oh, yes, you are. And I said, oh, no, I'm not. So we went around about that with a little while. And then finally, she said, why not? And I said, I have a really hard time understanding why these people that I see every day of the week who are really mean, really nasty, and horrible to everybody else, on one day out of the week, they'll dress up, they'll go sit down in this place we call church, and they act like they're everything, and then it starts all over again with the same thing. So I'm having a hard time with that. Plus, I have a hard time understanding how this is all done, because the theory of their creation isn't matching what I feel inside. So
right.
My mom didn't have an answer, so she left it be for a while, okay? So I really didn't go to church for a long time because I just couldn't, in my young mind, understand why they were saying something like they were saying when inside my heart I could never feel that because I figured if it's truth, it will come from my heart.
Right.
So I didn't start going back to church until I was like 18 or 19, and I only went back, Marshall, to find out what all of them had in common. And they all were saying kind of the same words, you know, I mean the same thing in common, but using a little different words. But the one thing that most of them kept teaching is how you're supposed to fear this mighty, powerful God. And
mm-hmm.
to this day, I disagree with all that. So when you came across with, you know, your book, I did not get to read your book, however I will. But I did not get to read it yet.
Thank you.
With the idea that there is a missing link, because the stories that are in the Bible really don't make a lot of sense to me.
Right.
And I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there who are going, oh my God, Nancy's an atheist. No, I'm not. I just believe there's a different theory that's really true. So knowing that, if I ask you some weird questions, just kind of excuse me, but your theory about the missing link, because that's what your whole book is about, let's talk about how you came out with that. Now, I know you read Zechariah's books, and he decoded a lot of things from you, so can you start maybe with
that? Okay, let me give you a kind of a history of what went on. A lot of the people, you know, who take religion on faith think that the Bible was the beginning of time, that the history in the Bible is when civilization started, and that's not really true. The history of mankind goes back thousands of years before the Bible, Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was recorded on these cuneiform tablets. Now, to explain to your audience what a cuneiform tablet is, these are like the Dead Sea Scrolls and other things that were found in the sands of Mesopotamia, which was the cradle of civilization. And they were written in a language called cuneiform script. It was the first written language that appears anywhere on the planet Earth, and it's written from the right to the left. To us, that would be backwards.
Mm-hmm.
But the stories that were told, there's over 300,000 of these clay tablets that have been found, and they've been fried by either fire or on purpose and made them like stone. So they lasted a very, very long time. In fact, they've lasted longer than any parchment script would last. And the stories that they tell are the most interesting stories to me to understand where we came from, because there was the original recorded civilization of the Sumerians. And the Sumerians were like 6,000 years ago, and they arrived with everything intact. And this doesn't happen with civilizations that come out of the caves. In other words, you have a civilization 6,000 years old that has writing, they have music, they have religion, they have astrology, they have astronomy, mathematics, et cetera, et cetera. All the first, even the wheel they had.
Mm-hmm.
And archaeologists said, that's impossible. Impossible for a new civilization that comes out of the woods to have all these things. Now, in the tablets, the Sumerian says, everything we have was given us by the Anunnaki. And the question was, who were the Anunnaki? Apparently, the Sumerians coexisted with this civilization. And it turns out, if you read the translations, either in Zechariah's books or other books who have translated these 2,000 scientific tablets, you will find out that they are an advanced space-age civilization that came to this planet a long time ago, and in the process of doing what they needed to do to save their planet, they needed primitive workers, and the story is that they genetically engineered humans from Homo erectus. Now, who is Homo erectus? If you look at the list of skeletons that they found, we appear in Southeast Africa. When I say we, I'm talking about Homo sapiens sapiens, and we appear 250,000 years ago. Our skeletal remains are there. The species before us is called Homo erectus, and they were evolving as a species for 1,800,000 years. And the most advanced they got were stone tools and spears. So here we have evolution at work in a creature that looks like us but can't talk because it doesn't have any vocal cords. And next to that appears Homo sapiens, us appearing. And how did that happen? There should logically, if you believe in evolution, there should be a traces of other skeletal remains to show the evolution from Homo erectus to Homo sapiens. But one of the first points that made sense to me was that since there wasn't any, then something had to happen, something special. And the special thing that happened was that the female egg of Homo erectus was taken from a female Homo erectus, and the DNA of the Anunnaki fertilized it, and it was placed in the womb of an Anunnaki female mother, birth mother. And the result is Adam. Bingo. They have a cylinder seal that shows the birthing of Adam and that we had done it. So what they did, in the terms of today's science, they genetically engineered us. In other words, jump-started the species from Homo erectus to Homo sapiens. Why'd they do it? Well, they had their reasons. They needed some primitive workers, and they couldn't talk to the Homo erectus. It's like very hard to make slaves out of Indians. The white settlers had a difficult time because they couldn't talk to them, and they were very clever, but they were a more advanced species. That's another story.
The thing that I always had a very hard time with is when they start talking the story about the three wise men that saw this bright light in the sky. And they followed it, and there below and behold is a Mary and whoever and the baby, okay?
Right.
I have the hardest time with that story.
I know. Okay? Well, that story has been changed quite a bit. It's possible that most of it's true, and it could be the interesting thing that this home planet of the Anunnaki has an elliptical orbit around our sun, which takes 3,600 years, so it doesn't come back very often. Now, the early civilizations of the Sumerians, they recorded seeing it. The Babylonians recorded seeing it. The Assyrians and the Greeks and the Romans never recorded it. Now, Jesus was born during the Roman civilization. And maybe the Star of Bethlehem was the return of the home planet of the Anunnaki, and maybe it wasn't, but nobody's ever been able to recreate the sky, the star sky at that time, and satisfactorily produce the phenomenon that apparently appeared in the East. So the stories around the Bible took many of their stories from the cuneiform tablets, which is interesting. The flood story was found in 1830 in what is now Iraq, in the sands of a king's library. And they saw this story of the Noah flood. They translated it and said, this is impossible. This thing is 2,000 years before the Bible. Well, look at it from a logistic point of view. If the scholars that wrote the Bible, the wise men, had access to these tablets, they would have found information that they could use.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens to be one of the stories that appears in the Bible. It came from... it's called the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's on 12 tablets, and it's quite a fascinating story because it's kind of like they're transferring information to us through their story of Gilgamesh to tell us what to look for in the future, and we can get into that later, too. But in the Bible, we have many, many questionable, like you're questioning, events. And I don't blame you for questioning them because some of them just don't make a lot of sense if you're a practical person.
Yeah, I just, like I said, I've had a very hard time with that. See, my thought is that the light that they saw in the sky was probably some form of a spaceship from an ET. I mean, that is how I've always believed, and I probably will continue.
Yeah, well, in a way, if it was Nibiru, if it was the planet Nibiru, which came now, I've been trying very seriously to pinpoint the cycles, the 3,600-year cycle, so everybody asks me, when is it coming back, and I'd like to give them a numerical answer. So if I started there, it's easy. It's just 3,600 years from zero is the next appearance.
Yeah, people are talking about it. So people who may not know what Nibiru is, they also call it the Planet X.
Yes.
And it is supposed to be getting closer and closer to our own planet. And yet there are some scientists out there who are still saying, no, that that's not true. It's just another story coming down the Internet.
That's right.
So
It's hard. I can go back to, say, the flood story. If I knew exactly when the flood was, which I think is maybe 13,000 years ago, and the biblical story of the Epic of Gilgamesh, not biblical, but the cuneiform tablet story of the Epic of Gilgamesh, pinpoints that Nibiru came by and caused the flood, okay? It was a tsunami that came up from the Arctic Ocean and covered the world because of the gravitation. This is a large body. This planet is bigger than ours. and it comes, every time it cycles back through, it comes between Jupiter and Mars. And if indeed that was the time frame, then you could take 1,300 years and keep subtracting 3,600, 3,600, 3,600, and you'll get another time when it'll appear again. Those are several ways that you can do this prediction of the return of Nibiru or Planet X.
Some people are saying that 2012 is that time frame because that is when all of our polars are supposed to be switched and everything else. But what I've seen is that a lot of this is all starting already, 2010, because I really believe we're about 2 years off from what our calendars say.
Uh-huh. Well, I think, you know, it's how you interpret the calendar, which they've historians have credited the Mayans with this calendar. It's not true. In my book, the Mayan calendar is a complex slide ruler. It's a stick with two intertwining circular disks that roll back and forth, and it can predict the dates of history from a million years ago to a million years forward. It wasn't designed just for an end point.
Right.
And in the Mayan, if you take how the Mayans interpreted it, it was cyclical. And it started in 3113 B.C. with the arrival in this continent, on the North and South American continent, of an Anunnaki prince who took with him some very tall, highly intelligent Africans called Olmecs. But anyway, he invented this calendar because he was kind of fed up with the arguing that was going on in Egypt and in Mesopotamia about whether it should be sun-based or moon-based. History's just filled with, revolutions that changed Egyptian temple history because of the calendar. The calendar was a very important thing, and how do you count? Our calendar is not really perfect. Our calendar is kind of, every 4 years we have to adjust it to make it
right. Plus, our calendar is wrong because we come up with New Year in January. Well, New Year in January here is still cold, snowing, and nasty. And to me, a new beginning would be spring when the things start to sprout again.
Now you're talking about the seven tablets that were called the story of creation, Enuma Elish, the epic of Enuma Elish, which was the Anunnaki's ceremonies at the beginning of the new year, which occurred at spring, the first day of spring. It's the month of Nisan, N-I-S-S-A-N. And if people want to get caught up, it's easy. In my book, Adam the Missing Link, Nancy, I kind of spell out most of the historical facts that are supportive of the theory of genetic engineering. And how I did this was that you can take the text and the words that are in the cuneiform tablets. They told what they did. They said this is what we did, and this is how we did it. But if you want to have proof that they were really here and did this, I selected 14 major
artifacts.
Artifacts. Well, actually, there's the pyramids and there's the cylinder seals and the cuneiform tablets and the stones at Baalbek. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things, Stonehenge, Easter Island, that people have been trying to explain for years. And I put them all together and kind of present them in the book, Adam the Missing Link, as irrefutable evidence that these things couldn't have been done by the local folk.
They still can't be done by local folk. All the technology that we have, they still cannot build the pyramid that has been there for all this time to be exactly like it. So, that was the other thing. I have a hard time with history because there is no way in my mind that back in that time you could just take normal everyday people and they're going to build these kind of things in perfect form, perfect angles,
absolutely,
and it turned out to last as long as it had.
And the plus the things that they built into it, stored information that occurred in these structures is fabulous. I mean, a lot of people don't know that the pyramid sides have a slight curve to them. they're indented in the center and make a little, not perceivable from the ground, curve between one point and the other corner. And what that curve is the diameter of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Newton discovered this. You know, there are lots of things that are still being discovered about these structures that are mind-blowers, really. And the most fascinating artifact that is left to us are the cylinder seals. The cylinder seals are a storage device, storage information device, that were made out of hematite stone. Now, a hematite stone, for your listeners who aren't familiar with the scale of hardness, has got a hardness equal to steel. It's as hard as steel, this stone. And these little cylinders, which are about the diameter of a pencil and maybe an inch tall, were carved in the negative with a picture story so that when you rolled it like a rolling pin over wet clay, it gave you a positive image story, transferred information. They were giving us information that has lasted for thousands and thousands of years, Nancy. We do not have a storage system yet that will last for a thousand years.
We don't have a lot of things that, you know, that, you know, that's actually being discovered today. And for people to try to, you know, say that there can never, you know, there's not ETs, there's not been here, they're not going to be here. I look at those people and I go, yeah, what planet are you from?
Right,
you know,
right.
You know, because
well, you know, the evidence that the people ask me, what do they look like? I say, look like you and me.
Mm-hmm.
We are them. They created us with this genetic cloning, genetic engineering process, and they were bigger. The Anunnaki were written about by the Sumerians, and the Sumerians says they were much taller and bigger than they were.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they show pictures of what they look like on these cylinder seals. In other words, there are pictures of them, and there's pictures of them creating us, Adam. And the interesting thing in that particular cylinder seal was that the story that went with it on the cuneiform tablet said that they kept trying and it didn't work. They were using crystal vases to mix the DNA and the ovum in it. And finally they used a clay vase, and it worked. And in the Bible it says, you know, God created Adam from the earth, the dirt of the earth. Or the,
mm-hmm.
So I think they got that from this story, because today the people who are doing the helping couples with producing children are mixing it in clay vases, and it's working.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody wanted to get your book, Marshall, where would they go to get it?
Okay, you go to my webpage, which is a store. It's www.adamthemissinglink.com. It's just the title of the book, www.adamthemissinglink, all one word altogether, .com. And on that page, you will see the book. You'll find some background on myself and what's in the book. And then there are three options. You can get an e-book, which is the easiest thing to quickly do, but be sure you wait and get the download when you go through the store and purchase the e-book. There is a hard copy, and then the third item is a CD, which you can put in your computer, and it'll play the Epic of Gilgamesh, which I've created in kind of a storybook form with pictures, and then it also has the book on there, e-book. So it's a kind of a double value.
I like the picture that's on your book, actually.
Well, you know, I was in the Sistine Chapel about 5 or 6 years ago, and I looked up and I said, you know, Michelangelo was great. He understood
mm-hmm.
the Bible. Now, Nancy, in the Bible it says God created humans, Adam, in his image. So what did he do? He painted Adam, and then he painted God as a Homo sapien.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was in, you know, it had to be, if he was in the image of us, we had to be in the image of him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you look at the background in that picture, behind God, it's like the human brain.
Yeah. It's a neat picture.
I mean, I love this guy because he obviously was a student, and he did everything in his power to portray the biblical stories for this pope. When he painted his ceiling, you know, which is kind of a drudgery for him. He didn't want to do it. He'd rather chisel his marble. he was better in sculpturing than in painting, but he did it. And I think it's the only thing that I would question in that portrait is that I know that the cloning took place in Southeast Africa, and the first human, or, you know, Homo sapien,
mm-hmm.
was dark skin, blood red skin. Homo erectus that were used as the material were dark Africans, sand color. So that Adam really wasn't Caucasian. He was dark skinned. Now, that's going to blow a lot of people away.
Oh, it is. Let me tell you. But, your whole book actually will blow a lot of people away because, you know, we have been told several different things about life and what we're supposed to do and how we're supposed to do it. And most people, when they read the Bible, they don't understand what they're reading to begin with. So they only go by what they're being told when they go to their church.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, for a long time, it's also been a way to keep people under control.
Absolutely.
And so, again, I have a problem with that because I really think people need to wake up and discover who they really are and how really perfect they are compared to what we're being told. You know, and yet people will continually choose to go to church every time and sit there and just kind of listen. And I'm not sure if books like yours are going to actually wake up the people. So, and it's not even that they have to necessarily believe you, Marshall.
No.
But at least
I agree
think
with
about
you.
It.
What I want them to do, and what I'd love to do one day, is to have this as a textbook in the science schools that are teaching evolution. And they should teach evolution, they should teach intelligent design, and they should teach genetic engineering, and let the kids decide for themselves what they want to believe, instead of cramming this other stuff that is partly, you know, actually, genetic engineering embodies both evolution and intelligent design, creationism, in this way. I've discovered in the research I've done, is that the Anunnaki had a deity.
Mm-hmm.
They had they called the deity the creator of all, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they paid attention, and that comes out. One of the reasons they gave us the story of Gilgamesh is because in the 11th tablet, when they tell the story of the Great Flood, the deity, creator of all, comes into force, and he says, look, your destiny was to come to the planet Earth and to create humans. Humans' destiny is to inherit the planet once you're gone. In order to do that, you got to save these people because the flood's coming. They knew the flood was coming.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to wipe everybody out. And there was this big argument going on, you know, about whether to save us or let us go, you know, amongst the Anunnaki. And here comes their deity, the creator of all, telling them the destiny of this operation is that they've created us. Now they've got to save us. And they did. They turned
mm-hmm.
around. After the flood, you got to realize that when the flood swept all over the earth, it covered everything with mud.
Right.
And the mud was something you couldn't deal with to get food out of it. So they brought down some trees, they brought down some animals, they had sheep and shepherding, and plow, they give a plow. One of the cylinder seals shows them giving the plow, and they taught them how to survive after the flood, which we couldn't have done. Humanity would have died, you know, if it hadn't had some help.
Mm-hmm.
After the flood.
See, one of the things, Marshall, I have to tell you, I moved from Chicago to New Mexico. And I moved to New Mexico so I could open a school. It's called the School of Now. And it's a school of spiritual truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so your comment about what children should be taught is part of what my plan is, so that the children actually do get to make their choice and
right.
be all they can be without being told that they have ADD, ADHD problems
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I came down here to New Mexico to do.
Wonderful.
And I'm trying very hard to do.
It's classic. There aren't too many people like you, Nancy, who want the kids to learn by making their own choices. And this is a very important subject. It dominates 50% of the world because they adhere to what the dogma is of religions. And that's okay. Nothing wrong with faith. I don't have a problem with that at all. But my problem is that the truth of where we came from shouldn't be disguised in gobbledygook.
Right. See, and that's one of the things that I came down here to do. And so when I was reading, you know, some of your bio and stuff, I thought, you know, he's got it going here. And so
I satisfied myself. Let's put it this way. I was the curious guy kicking tires all over the place. I'm an engineer by education, and I needed to know what the truth was.
Mm-hmm.
And
I really think, Marshall, everybody needs to know what the truth is, and then without, you know, people standing there, you know, over them, telling them, no, you can't believe this way because that's bad and it's evil and you're wrong and you're going to go to hell. Mm-hmm. I really believe people need to be able to make up their own mind. And I'm watching these children being taught the same old stuff, the same old way, and all these children are pretty bored because they really insight know better.
Oh,
but
they're smart.
As soon as, they're very smart. Technologically smarter than what we really can imagine. And yet these kids are being drugged to keep them stupid. And I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, I have several projects going since I wrote the book. And one of them was to get it into a film format so that it would reach a larger audience. A lot of people don't read. You know, they just get their information in other fashion. So I've got a movie script. I've got a film script. I wrote it with my wife. And we eventually will either get it into a documentary or get it into a full-fledged film. And other than that, I would love to get into the... I got into the argument with the Kansas City Board of Education about what they should teach their kids. They had a big legal lawsuit going. And, everybody wanted to teach just evolution, and there was money behind intelligent design, which was creationism, and they were fighting to get that in the school. And I said, well, you know, you guys ought to really look at this third alternative because it embodies both creationism and evolution, and I think it's really the true story, and let the kids decide. Well, I got two out of the three members of the board to agree, but I couldn't get a majority enough to get it put in there. And then when I heard about this Texas thing where they apparently the Texas school board dominates the generation of textbooks, and they were arguing about words and what they could put into the books about the history, blah, 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 blah. And I said, you know, if I could just surface this opportunity to help our generations, our future generations, understand this information so they are better equipped to deal with their lives and also to deal with their careers.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's career information that will free them.
It really will. You know, one of my own quotes that I tell a lot of people, and I've said it several times, is if you keep your head buried in the sand long enough, you're really going to get your butt kicked really hard, seeing how that's the only thing that's showing.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps happening over and over again, and it's, you know, kind of frustrating for me because I'm an intuitive life coach, so people call me all the time and say, what should I do, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's not that I tell them what to do. I just give them different ways of doing things, and then it's really their choice. But one of the things I tell them is that you cannot keep your head buried in the sand at this point because there's so many new things that are going to be discovered and talked about, and you're going to have to kind of look at it with an open mind because if you don't, you know, not only your head, but the rest of your body is going to be swallowed up with everything that's, you know, going on.
Yeah.
So it's real important to think.
Interestingly enough, Nancy, this information came out of the sands of Iraq. It was all buried there for thousands of years until we discovered it. And now that it's a fact that the British Museum has 300,000 or 120,000 cuneiform tablets and 1,500 or so cylinder seals, and the information is available in other museums, but the main thing is you need people to easily understand it. And that's why I made my book 8.5 by 11.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Life magazine. It's got 145 pictures, color pictures, of what we're talking about, of the evidence that they can look at. So that it's not a big book. It's not a thick, heavy thing that you have to be heavy-duty reader to get through it. It's easy to read. It's got the pictures that shows the evidence. I put a few words down here and there explaining what these things mean and how it happened. And by the time they get done reading it, it should be easy to make up your mind what you believe.
What do you think the churches, the different forms of religious churches, have to say about your book?
Okay, that's a good question, Nancy. I'm glad you asked that. I'd forgotten about Monsignor Balducci. He's the Vatican's emissary to the world about the future. Now, a little background before I tell you what he's telling people. He represents the Catholic Church, which is probably one of the biggest churches that we need to deal with in this particular subject. Basically what he's saying, and he says it in lectures, he goes around the world lecturing for the Vatican, that they're not concerned about where our bodies came from. Their responsibility is for our souls. So this bypasses beautifully any question that could come up that eventually we were genetically engineered, because they're not really interested in where our bodies. And yes, maybe there are space people, and yes, maybe they did create our bodies, but the church is responsible for the souls of humanity. This, I think, is an interesting approach by the Catholic Church, because back in the 1600s, when Galileo tried to tell them that the Earth wasn't the center of the universe, he was one of theirs, and he had a little telescope. If you look through my telescope, you'll see the moons of Jupiter, and you'll understand all this. They wouldn't even look through his telescope. They had said and stuck to their guns that the Earth was the center of the universe. And they put poor Galileo in jail so he wouldn't talk anymore. House arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had to recant from that 400 years later, because it wasn't true what they were saying. So now, what's true about where we came from is that it doesn't matter. The church's responsibility is for our souls, which I think is, okay.
Yeah, I do. There was an announcement made. There's been lots of announcements about new UFOs being sighted, new UFOs coming in, everybody expecting tons of UFOs to suddenly appear during 2012. Well, I don't buy that, but I do buy that they're already around. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, the easiest way when they ask me that, Nancy, I tell them, Earth is like a 7-Eleven. Every civilization that's out there sees us, wants to come down and take a look.
Mm-hmm. And they do.
They do. And we are going to do the same thing. In other words, once we become a fully blown space age species out there looking for Earth too, we see something looks good, we're going to go down and take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Just the human nature.
Well, it should be. In your book, you have when they go to your website.
Yes.
AdamTheMissingLink.com. There's a little section there that says you can, kind of look in the book.
Oh, yeah. Right. Good. Glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
Underneath the book, there's a look inside button.
Mm-hmm.
So you can push the button, and the pages will flip. About 5 or 6 pages in there. Just a little taste of what I put in the book and what it looks like. But bear in mind, it's 8.5 by 11. It's like Life magazine. It's large.
Yeah, which is actually good. But you have one picture that's there that people can actually look at, and it shows ancient flying machines.
Yes.
And explain those pictures
to
the listeners.
Okay, that comes from a temple in Egypt. It's a 3,000-year-old temple, and up in the beam, in the ceiling, a guy was sculpturing, and he sculpted this one little section where he shows a helicopter, a submarine, a glider, and a shuttlecraft. And my question was, what was he looking at? He wasn't making this stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
He had to be seeing something in order to sculpture it into this ceiling. And I think it represents the Ark. I think it represents what the Anunnaki called the whirlwinds, which are helicopters. And I treated this panel in the ceiling as a stored information sculpture. Or they were passing down information for us to utilize when we got all the facts together. And that's why I put that picture in there. and I later on explained what the Ark was and why the Ark was a submarine, because it had to deal with a tsunami, a tidal wave. And then the general picture of the Ark sitting on top of the water never would have made it.
No.
Womp.
But again, the story that you hear in the Bible, you know, talks about how he took two of everything, and that's how everybody was saved.
Right.
And,
right.
You know,
okay.
for 40 nights or whatever the case may be.
All right, here's how they did that. The Ark wasn't that big to carry all that. So, but the Anunnaki collected in a golden box the DNA from every species on the planet so that it could be reproduced afterward. And they stored that in the Ark along with the family. By the way, one of the Anunnaki's son was Noah. They were what we call demigods. They were those that were produced from Anunnaki fathers and human females. That species became demigods and later on became Homo sapiens sapiens. But his family and some animals, and you know, went in there to survive. Birds went in there, but the majority of the species, the 2x2 things, were in DNA jars.
Yeah, well, when I heard that story the first time, I thought, well, how could just, you know, those people round up all these wild things
right.
and expect them to walk on this boat?
Right. That was a cute story.
And, well, it is. I mean, it is, except I'm like you. I have a really hard time with a lot of
things.
With
the reality of how you do that, right.
Yeah,
right.
You know.
Okay. And well, bear in mind that when they came out, they had the box which they gave to the Anunnaki leaders, and the Anunnaki leaders used it to reproduce all of the existing species that were there, plus some more that they brought down from their mothership, like the sheep and the
mm-hmm.
goats, which they didn't have. Anyway, it's a fascinating story. It makes more sense to me with the scientific information we have at our disposal now that this is believable. This could be done. This is
mm-hmm.
something we'd probably do.
What? Marshall, why do you think it took us so long to learn about the DNA like we know it now? And we don't even know all of it now.
All right, look at it this way. Remember I told you that Homo erectus, the species before us, was evolving for 1,800,000 years, and their tool-making got only to stones and spears.
Mm-hmm.
1,800,000 years. Ask yourself this question. If we appear as a species, Homo sapiens, 250,000 years ago, how the hell are we walking on the moon?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen. You think evolution takes a long, 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 long time to make it happen. So our DNA that we got from the Anunnaki, who were probably a species that was 1,000,000 years ahead of us in science and technology. All the things I've read in the writings and the translations of the cuneiform tablets blow my mind at what they're able to do, how they did it, how they built the pyramids. And I put all that in the book. So, in fact, I actually literally translated how they did it and put it on the page next to the pyramid.
Mm-hmm. That's good because, again, I mean, we look at all of these and they call them the 8 wonders of the world. We look at all of them and we go, okay, well, now, how would that so many, you know, years ago. How could that be, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's a very short time. We're only here, you know, in the scheme of things, the Earth is 4.5 billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been species that have been here and dominated, like the dinosaurs, and they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the mammals, which is the group that we belong to, have been around, you know, for millions and millions of years, and yet the first time you find a fossil remain of a human, Homo sapien, is only 250,000 years ago. That's a very,
mm-hmm.
very short time. So that the smarts that we have had to come, I think, from their DNA being part of us. And an interesting thing, in 2000, somebody spent $1 billion and did the human genome, you know,
mm-hmm.
all the genes that are in us. Only about, you know, 25 to 30,000. Yet there's 223 genes in there that don't have any relationship, any evolutionary relationship to anything that we are. And everybody says, well, where'd they come from? Guess what? If you understand the story of genetic engineering, that's where they came from.
Yeah,
and here's another thing. If this species, the Anunnaki, are a million years more advanced than we are, they've apparently genetically altered their physical being so they have no more diseases and they don't die of anything. In fact, they live thousands of years, Nancy. Thousands and thousands of years. Now, that's hard for us to wrap around and think about, but we are doing experiments now, like you said, and we're finding out that there are genes that are, Ms. Galen Berkeley calls it, one gene she found that's called the Grim Reaper. It's in worms. She was doing an experiment with worms because NASA wanted her to find out if we could genetically alter some astronauts so they could live a long time, longer than, you know, normal, so they could make these journeys way out there. And she had two sets of worms, and one set she turned off the Grim Reaper gene, and the others she left as they were side by side, and guess what? The ones where she turned off the Grim Reaper lived 10 times longer than the first ones. And she extrapolated that humans could live 500 years. Well, that sounds astronomical to us, but in my perception of Anunnaki, who lived thousands and thousands of years, that's not very good. I mean, we're only making 500.
Yeah. One of the things I tell people, Marshall, is our bodies are actually designed to live for over 500 years if we just knew how to preserve it the way we should by not being so mean to it, you know.
Well, we are learning. See, we're in the infancy of everything. We're in the infancy of our space age. We're in the infancy of our medicine. And I'll tell you one thing that, you know, say the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. That's not the important thing. The important thing is the destiny of our planet is connected to our sun. How long is our sun going to last? And with current projections from our scientific community, the sun is good for another 5 billion years. It's a 10 billion year old thing that works, and then it dies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what happens when the sun, our star, dies? It blows itself up into a supernova, and it consumes all the planets, eats them up. We're gone. Our species is gone. The only way we're going to survive is to get off this planet and go out into space and find Earth 2 in another solar system where we can continue our species. It's survival of the fittest. That's why we're becoming a space-age species. And if we survive this, we should, you know, leave this planet, which its destiny is to die in 5 billion years.
Which is still a long time.
Oh, it's a heck of a long time. I'm just putting it in perspective of why we need to be space-age people. We eventually, you know, they came here and created our species and left.
Mm-hmm.
Our destiny was to take care of this planet as long as it could survive, but its destiny is it's tied to the sun. It goes around and around, and one day it's going to go bye-bye.
Marshall, the theory about the 2012 thing that they get from the Mayan calendar, can you explain to people, because, I mean, with the media and people in general, they just are having this hardest time because somebody made the statement that the calendar ended, so that means the Earth is going to end. Mm-hmm. So can you explain to the people that are listening really what's going to be going on?
Okay, well, in my best interpretation of the slide rule device, which produces these dates and these cycles, is that the cycle of 2012 is the end of one of the large cycles, and then a new one starts. It's everything is in cycles, and it keeps repeating itself. And the Mayans were given this calendar by the Anunnaki, and it made them, you know, look smart, and they could claim it for their own. But the their religion, which is in a way a religion, was based on events happening at certain times. And this 2012 has been around for a long time. We've known about it, you know, it's been known, and it's just the end of this one cycle. And to me, it'll just reborn and start over again. There's no doomsday to it. I would tell people not to worry about it. Just another date on the calendar.
That's what I tell people. It's not going to come to an end. It's shifting because it needs to shift. We need to be a little bit more awakened. So there will be things.
Now, in my book, I have a picture of it. I've got a picture of the calendar, and I describe how it works and what it was used for. And I'll put it this way. The Anunnaki who created it was probably one of the most brilliant of their species. And he did things, he was the one that created us. He was the genetic engineer that created us. And when he got, and he was ruling in Egypt, and he got exiled from Egypt for some reason, which I don't want to go into right now. He went to the New World, and the reason he went there was that their gold mining operations after the flood were no longer in Southeast Africa. They were at Lake Titicaca up in Bolivia and Peru, where there were open mines. They could just pick the gold out of there, and they didn't have to refine it. They could just, send it back that way. So he was responsible for that. But while he was there, he said, I'm going to do things better than I did in Mesopotamia. I'll show everybody. So he created this calendar, which was better than any calendar they ever had, because they were arguing about sun and moon. He built the pyramids of the Central America in a different fashion. You notice that those pyramids, you could access them. You could climb up them from the outside, mm-hmm. which you couldn't do on the Giza pyramids in Egypt. He also created the Mayan glyph language. I mean, those glyphs are gorgeous. They're just beautiful. Mm-hmm. If you ever studied the Mayan glyphs, they are vastly superior to Egyptian hieroglyphics, which is what was being used in Egypt. So these are all. But I'll tell you one thing he did that they didn't see. When they did the Sumerian civilization, they gave them the wheel. And the wheels produced chariots, and the chariots were used in wartime. When he introduced the civilization in Mesoamerica, no wheel was given. So they never knew about the wheel. They never used the wheel. They had toys that had wheels on them, but they didn't know how to use the wheel on chariots. And therefore, they were, in my estimation, more controllable
mm-hmm.
as a population and less warlike, although they ended up warring anyway. And they couldn't move things around because they didn't have a wheel. So it's an interesting study in control, like they were. Eventually, they became gods to the Sumerians and the Babylonians, and they went all the way down. The same characteristic of the 12 gods of the Sumerians. If you look it up in your history book, you go down to Greek and Roman who worship these gods. Also, there was Zeus in the Greek. He had a brother who was Poseidon. And in the Romans, it was Jupiter and had a brother who was Neptune and Aphrodite was Ishtar. And in the Romans, it was Venus.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that they became godlike figures after thousands of years of coexisting, and then they withdrew and became overlords. So the concept of multiple god worship existed for 6,000 years. Then in 0 in the Roman Empire, Christianity came in. Actually Judaism first, and then Christianity.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting how it's all about. Marshall, give out the name of your book again and your website so people can get it, because they're almost out of time.
Okay. It's Adam the Missing Link is the name of the book, and it's easy to remember it as the webpage is www.adamthemissinglink.com. And once you get to the web page, there's a lot of information there, and then there's a way to acquire it through my store. I have actually a store that they can use their credit cards and just either purchase the hard copy or purchase the ebook or purchase the CD.
Great. You know, it's been very enlightening, Marcel. I love talking to people like you.
Thank you, Nancy. You're well informed. I mean, it's wonderful to do an interview with somebody that really understands what's going on.
Well, I thank you very much. But I really thank you for taking the time to be on the show. And maybe a little bit later down the road, we'll have you back on the show again.
Sure.
Because there's still a whole bunch more that we really didn't cover that I think that the listeners would be really fascinating with hearing.
Wonderful. Look forward to it.
We'll have that. So, Marcel, again, thank you very much for being on the show.
All right. Thank you, Nancy.
You're very welcome. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll all talk next time. Take care. Bye now.